Welcome to Wall Street News Network. Today, I would like to introduce Dr. Mark Skousen, a financial economist, editor of the Forecasts and Strategies Financial Newsletter since 1980, and presidential fellow at Chapman University, where he recently received the Most Favorite Professor Award. He is also the producer of Freedom Fest, the world's largest gathering of free minds. He is the author of several books, including The Maxims of Wall Street, now in its 8th edition. Welcome, Dr. Skousen.
Glad to be with you, Fred. It's a pleasure.
Great. Well, to get started, I know that many listeners are concerned that we've been in a bull market for about a dozen years, and the P.E. ratio of the S&P 500 is fairly high. I think it's around 40. And COVID has affected businesses and consumer spending. So do you think we're in for a crash soon, or can the market continue to rise for a while?
Well, I'm a devoted follower of the Austrian School of Economics, of Mises and Hayek, and they say that easy money, which the Federal Reserve has been promoting now for, well, really since 2008 financial crisis, and then redoubling their efforts with quantitative easing and lower rates in 2020, that has perpetuated what the Austrians call a boom-bust cycle. There's genuine prosperity and there's artificial prosperity. I see them growing together, just like the parable of the wheat and the tares in the Bible, where artificial and genuine prosperity are growing together, but at some point you have to pull the two apart between the the wheat and the weeds, if you will. So I think you can justify a bull market, but the zero interest rate policy of the Federal Reserve has created stocks going too high too fast. And there is going to be a correction, whether it's a crash or not. I did predict the 1987 stock market crash, but I only accept the idea of bear markets in the future, not real crashes per se. I mean, the stock market crashed over 20%, 22% in 1987. And the reason that is hard to predict and unlikely to happen is because government intervenes rather quickly to keep a crash from spreading. So that's why you'll see bear markets from time to time and severe corrections in the market, but not necessarily a crash. So what I'm suggesting is that you can justify higher stock prices right now. I've been 100% invested during this entire period since 2009. And including the 2020 period when we had a short-term sharp sell-off. So I remain bullish. I'm 100% invested. But there will come a time when the Fed starts raising rates and we get an inverted yield curve, which we've had in the past. That's what I'm looking for. When short-term rates are higher than long-term rates, that's when we look for a bear market and a recession and all the other troubles associated with it. Right now, we have a positive yield curve, so I remain invested. And any of these corrections that we've seen, I use as buying opportunities.
Great. So are there any other factors besides an increase in short-term rates that you look for to determine if we've moved into a bear market?
I do think that we are witnessing, there's other possibilities. I mean, a war breaking out in the Middle East, what China is doing, aggressively suppressing dissension in Hong Kong and trying to aggressively expand its powers in Asia. These could cause an interruption in the bull market. So there's always a lot of other factors involved. The pandemic itself was an example of where the economy could tank, especially if government overreacts like they did last year with the lockdowns. So there's obviously lots of other factors. But overall, I do look as a primary mover and shaker in this business, Federal Reserve policy. and fiscal policy also, which is totally irresponsible right now with the massive deficit spending. All of this is very bullish right now, but at some point you have to pay the piper. And when interest rates go up, we're going to see severe challenges by our government leaders who have, you know, they're totally imprudent at this point. So they always think that more spending is better than less spending, and we have no, everything is turned upside down now. We have no responsible, we have very few leaders who are responsible in Washington or on the state level these days.
Mm-hmm. Is there any particular industry that you believe will perform well over the next few years or perform the best over the next few years?
Well, I write a newsletter called Forecasts and Strategies. So I do try to forecast and make predictions about the future. In 2020, and every January I do a prediction issue. So in January 2020, I did warn of a black swan event that could derail the longest bull market in history. And I think we got that with the pandemic and with the lockdown. And in January of 2021, I focused on two areas that I thought would continue to be really bullish. One is technology, and the other is cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. And both of those have been proven to be still in a major bull market. I think that trend will continue. I mean, as long as the government does not interfere with the entrepreneurial spirit of America by raising rates to excessively high levels or over-regulate the economy, and I do fear that with the switch from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. So as long as we have freedom to engage in enterprise, then I think this technology revolution in healthcare, I mean, look what they did on the vaccines, how quickly private enterprise, government constantly interfered with the lockdown and so forth, but private enterprise stepped up to the plate and have delivered. And I think that trend will continue. So while technology stocks from time to time get ahead of themselves, as we saw a couple of weeks ago, where you had a severe correction, that's going to happen from time to time. I mean, technology is in the forefront of the breakthroughs and innovations and entrepreneurship. So that's going to be continuing to be highly volatile. And Bitcoin as well. I think Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, this whole blockchain technology is a major revolution that's taking place. And I'm fully invested in it. I don't think it's just a bubble. I don't think it's just a tulip mania. It does get ahead of itself, but I see tremendous opportunities in those areas.
So you definitely think that cryptocurrency is here to stay? I mean, I understand blockchain is a separate area, but that cryptocurrency is here to stay, and will that be a store of value, kind of like how gold has been in the past?
It certainly has taken the place of gold, and maybe to some extent silver, although silver is doing much better than gold. But normally gold would be in a major bull market given the easy money policies and the spending policies out of Washington. But as you can see, it has been pulling back while Bitcoin continues to rise. So there's no question that institutions are moving very heavily into Bitcoin. I do think it's a winner-take-all market, and Bitcoin will be the prevailing cryptocurrency until we see a new technology. And I don't think you can separate blockchain from Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies, because you can't have one without the other. I mean, Bitcoin is based on a blockchain ledger, that's how Bitcoin is recorded. So it's all part of the same process. I do think that the blockchain is a beautiful new technology, and I'm hoping it can be perfected, because right now they have delays. The problem is confirmation of transactions does take a while, and you need instantaneous confirmation of transactions. But once that is overcome, then I see it being used in the stock and bond markets, in commodity markets. I see it in real estate. I can't wait for the day when title insurance goes out of business.
All right. Well, we mentioned the gold a little bit. So do you think now is a good time to start investing in gold? And do you think you're better off going into gold bullion or gold stocks or both or neither?
This is one of the, Fred, this is one of the surprise areas for me. There's always surprises that you learn in when there's a transformation in technology that's taking place. I really expected, I've been recommending gold and gold mining stocks, but they have been hammered since the election. The dollar has been stronger, but that, you know, that's relative to other currencies. But apparently our increase in interest rates recently has caused the dollar to gain even further strength. And gold is quoted in dollars and has been hurt by the strength of the dollar and Bitcoin as the new inflation hedge. Now, I don't know how long that will continue. And I'm recommending a mining stock that is selling for under 9x earnings. I mean, who would think of a mining company as a value stock? Highest in the yield is over 3% dividend yield, rising dividend. A company that is produced, it's B2 Gold is what I'm talking about. BTG is the symbol. That stock is down 20% this year, down 40% since the election. So it's one of my favorite gold stocks. It's growing in terms of gold production very rapidly, has profit margins of 39%, and yet the stock is down. So it's a crazy world out there. I don't know how long it's going to last. To quote from the Maxims of Wall Street, which is one of my most popular books, I quote John Maynard Keynes, who said, the stock market can stay irrational longer than your pocketbook can stay solvent. And so while the fundamentals look very strong for my gold recommendations, they just haven't done well so far.
Wow. Okay. Now, what about comparing gold to silver? Do you think silver has a greater potential to rise further over gold?
Yes, indeed. I have noticed just from a technical point of view that silver is holding up a lot better than gold. And it does have an upward trend while gold has a downward trend. So I do think there's a separation there in terms of the monetary value of gold versus the industrial use of silver. And all the other commodities are rising. So I'm very bullish on oil. Our energy stocks have done really well. We've been recommending Exxon, which is up 45-50% this year, still going strong. It's kind of surprising given that Biden is very anti-fossil fuels and is in favor of alternative energy, but that is hurting the supply. And meanwhile, with the economic recovery, oil prices are headed higher. Gas prices are headed higher. Copper, aluminum, silver, all of the commodities are rising. Gold is the only one that's not rising, and that's because it's viewed primarily as a monetary metal and as an inflation hedge, is being replaced by Bitcoin.
Okay. Now, just recently, there are several stocks that were subject to a lot of short squeeze publicity, like GameStop and AMC, but also for a while they were talking about a short squeeze on silver. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, we tried. I have some trading services, and we tried to play the silver short squeeze. It only lasted a couple of days, so we got out of that, and we're not in it right now. But GameStop seems to still be the game in town. And to be honest with you, it is not a market that I feel comfortable playing, because you never know. I mean, on a frequent basis, it can be up 20, 30, 50%, and then suddenly turn on a dime and be down 30 or 40%. It's been moving up and down like a yo-yo. But it is a new phenomenon that investors cannot ignore. The fact is that there is a new movement out there with Reddit and these other, Robin Hood and so forth being involved, and this is not going to go away. So there are going to be opportunities there on a short-term basis, an extreme short-term basis, to profit on the ups and downs of this new phenomenon. I suspect the SEC is going to get very much involved in this, because what you're seeing is the technical charting and the technical indicators moving totally different than the fundamentals. Everything that I've seen with GameStop is that fundamentally a company that is just not going anywhere. It has a book value of $5 a share. It has a negative return on equity of 57%. So unless the geeks out there are now rushing to the GameStop retail stores and buying product there, which they didn't do before, so we won't know for sure what's happening in that regard. There's no justification for GameStop just going through the roof other than a political move by the Occupy Wall Street types that want to stick it to the man, stick it to the hedge funds and the private equity players who have been shorting this stock and giving them a hard time. So it's not something I feel comfortable playing right now, but I do know a number of people who have benefited by buying puts and selling shorts and doing that sort of thing when GameStop gets at a very high overvalued level. But it is a dangerous game. I'm not anyone who's a veteran in this business is not playing the long side of GameStop, I can tell you that.
Okay. And it seems like it's mostly young people that are doing it, which I don't know what you think about more and more young people getting involved in trading and learning how to trade, even if they lose money on buying things like GameStop. Do you think that that's a good thing or a bad thing, that it's attracting a lot more young people into trading and hopefully investing down the road?
Absolutely. I think it's great that they're getting involved. You and I, we've spoken at conferences like the money shows and that sort of thing for years, and we know the audience there. The average age is 60 years of age, and we have I did a time in front of 1,000 people at the money show, and I said, by a show of hands, how many of you are on Social Security and Medicare? And almost every hand went up. Of course, I had a fun exercise with them. I said, now keep your hands up. So all their hands are up. And I said, now how many are on food stamps? And it's fun to watch all the hands go down. So that's because there's a means test. It's not that people think it's a welfare system they wouldn't be on. It's just that they don't qualify to be on food stamps.
Yeah.
But investors, unfortunately, your interest in investments is not very strong with most young people, because as the old saying, again, I'll quote from the Maxims of Wall Street, the hardest thing in the world to do is for young people to save and old people to spend. And it's older people that have all this money and they're afraid of running out of the money. So they attend these conferences and they subscribe to newsletters and they're on the internet all the time, checking their stocks and so on. And that's all very good and well, but we do need young people to get involved more and to take personal finance courses. They really ought to require in high school and in college that everybody take a personal finance course, which will be very helpful for people to get excited and involved. The Roth IRA is a great investment. I was just working with my daughter, getting involved investing in a Roth IRA. You can put up to $6,000 in a Roth IRA every year, and it's totally tax-free while you invest, and when you take the money out, it's tax-free. So the Roth IRA is perfect for young people to get involved, and it will encourage them to stay long-term, because you try to take the money out, there is a penalty until age 55. So what's the best way for young people to start investing? It's not to take a long course, it's just to start investing. And if it's getting involved with GameStop and they learn how to lose money fast, then more power to them. And I think it's really great that they're getting involved.
Great. Okay, now we talked about interest rates real briefly, but they're at an extreme low right now. What do you think will trigger a significant increase in rates?
Well, interest rates are a very tough thing to call. I'm as surprised as everyone that interest rates have stayed as low as they are, and that negative interest rates occurred in Europe. I have a wonderful, very thick book on my library called The History of Interest Rates. And in that book, the author, I'm sure, would be surprised as anyone to see what has happened in the last 10 years with interest rates collapsing and staying low despite all the quantitative easing and the government spending and borrowing money. I mean, that should increase dramatically interest rates, but they haven't. My argument is that you have to have consumer price inflation to come back, because inflation is going on, but the inflation is going into asset classes. It's going into stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, Bitcoin. That's where the money is going. It's not going into consumer prices. But consumer prices are finally starting to move. If you go to the grocery store lately, if you go to fast food restaurants lately, any kind of restaurants, when you buy food, prices are going up, and they're going up rather dramatically. And we don't have the global economy that we've had in the past due to the protectionism of both Trump and Biden. Both of them are in the same boat here. They're not really much of free traders. And they're supporting the unions, and unions favor higher prices and higher wages. All of that is going to work together to start pushing inflation back up. And once consumer price inflation starts rising, watch out. That's when interest, this is why long-term rates are going up right now. The Fed can control short-term rates with the Fed funds rate and with the discount rate, but they have no impact. That's totally the bond market and the stock market determining the 10-year treasury rate and the 30-year treasury and really the real estate mortgage. So these are low interest rates, and I expect those rates to be rising, and rising rather sharply in the next couple of years, because the government thinks they can spend money like water, that they can run these deficits and run the national debt up, but eventually it's going to come back to haunt them, and they're going to show how irresponsible they were in overspending. And the global economy is recovering. The lockdown is being gradually reduced, and we're going to get back to normal here. And when we do, with all this new money, prices have to start rising. And so I'm looking for price inflation at the consumer and producer price level to be the first indication that we're back to normal with rising rates. And then the Fed will be forced to raise rates, and that will be the end of the bull market in bonds, which has occurred for 30-some years. It's truly amazing.
Wow. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end here. Now, we've mentioned your Maxims book earlier. Can you describe the book for the reader, our listeners?
So the Maxims of Wall Street is something that I was collecting all the sayings on Wall Street, like sell in May and go away and don't come back till Labor Day. And there's hundreds of these out there that veteran Wall Streeters and money managers and hedge funds use. You hear them all the time. Buy low, sell high. And of course, today it's buy high, sell higher. I started writing them down over 30 some years ago, and I put them into a folder. And then in 2011, I finally decided to put together it in a book, all by different categories. So it's not like just a bunch of quotes. It puts them in various categories like gold, income investing, dividends, growth versus value. All of these quotes on personal finance and savings and so on. And there's over 800 quotes in there. So I put it together in 2011, and it has just been a super success. I've sold over 40,000 copies. It's gone through 8 editions. And right now, I just came out with the 10th anniversary edition. And it's been endorsed by Warren Buffett, by Jack Bogle, by Kevin O'Leary, a number of people use it. If you have brokers who are listening to it, it makes a wonderful gift. It's in gold and it's in green and gold with gold lettering. So it's a real classic. And if people go to skousenbooks.com, they can get an autographed copy, and I pay for the postage, just $20 for the book. And it's really fun. I'll give you one of my favorite quotes in the book. Nothing can make the spirit fly higher than finding a bargain when you're the buyer. And nothing can make the spirit sink deeper than finding it later a whole lot cheaper.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Now, you've written quite a few books. If you could recommend one other of your books, what would it be?
Well, I'll quickly give two of them. For investors, another book I have, I've mentioned the Austrian School of Economics. I have written a book called A Viennese Waltz Down Wall Street. It's a play on a Random Walk Down Wall Street by Burt Macchiel. But in my case, I believe investing is like a dance or a waltz rather than a drunk sailor kind of meandering down the street and you can't predict at all the future. In a dance, you can predict where you're moving and so on, but you do have free will and you do have human action, and sometimes it's unpredictable where you're going. So a dance, I think, is a better metaphor of the stock market. So that's my other book, A Viennese Waltz Down Wall Street, also available for $20 autographed and so on. And then finally, my favorite economics book is called The Making of Modern Economics. It's published by Routledge Publishers. It's in its third edition, and it's the history of the great economic thinkers from Adam Smith and include to Milton Friedman. It has chapters on Karl Marx and John Maynard Keynes, all of the great economic thinkers, and it's full of anecdotes, photographs, pictures, lots of stories, and a lot of my friends really enjoy it. John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods Markets, has read it 3 times and really loves the way the story unfolds. So those are some of the books that I have available. And so if they go to skousenbooks.com, they can get more information and autographed copies. And I mail all of them at my own expense. You just pay one price, and it's less than what you'd get on Amazon. So overall, a win-win for everybody.
Great. Well, thank you very much for doing this podcast. And just a reminder, more information can be found about Dr. Skousen's Forecasts and Strategies newsletter, which, by the way, I've subscribed to for many, many years, and also his trading services at markskousen.com. That's spelled S-K-O-U-S-E-N. And his books are available at skousenbooks.com. Well, thanks again, Mark.
Thank you, Fred. Real pleasure.